Continuous rain had put a stop to the usual activities of the outlaws. The game of Red Indians, if played in a perpetual downpour, palls after an hour or two, and even the absorbing pastime of pirates loses its savour when it has reached a certain pitch of dampness. So the outlaws assembled in the leaky old barn and watched the rain despondently. And then Douglas said, quite suddenly, "Let's have a newspaper." They looked at him with interest. "A newspaper?" said William slowly, as though he were weighing the idea judicially. "Yes," said Douglas. "Write one, you know, and someone be editor. The editor's a sort of chief man." "I'll be that," put in William hastily. "Now, how are we going to start?" "Got to think of a name first, I suppose," said Douglas. There was silence while the outlaws thought. "Outlaw's Daily Times," said Ginger at last.
"That means doing it every day, whether it rains or not," said Douglas. "Not likely."
"Outlaw's Weekly Times, then," said Ginger.
"Not every week, neither," said Douglas very firmly.
"Why not Outlaw's Telegraph?" said Henry.
"'Cause it's not a telegraph," said William. "It's a newspaper."
"Well, why not have Outlaws and District Times," said Douglas, "same as the one we take at home."
This title met with no objection. The name Outlaws and District Times was adopted. "Now we've got to write news," said William cheerfully, producing paper and pencils from one of the damp packing cases that furnished the old barn.
"But there isn't any news," objected Henry. "Nothing's happened except rain."
"We'll say it's been raining then," said Douglas encouragingly.
"You can't fill a newspaper with saying it's raining," said Henry.
"Newspapers don't only say news," contributed Ginger, with an air of deep wisdom. They sort of write about things they don't like and about people doing things they don't like."
William brightened.
"We could easily do that," he said. "Let's all start writing about people doing things we don't like and start now, straight off."
The outlaws signified their assent. There was silence, broken only by the sound of the rain dripping on and through the roof of the old barn, and the groans of the outlaws in mental travail. Then suddenly, through the silence, came a shrill voice.
"Hello, William, darling."
William looked up with a groan. Violet Elizabeth Bott, gumbooted, mackintoshed, sou'westered, stood smiling happily in the doorway. Violet Elizabeth was a maiden of 6 years with a lisp, an angelic face, and a will of iron. William dreaded and respected Violet Elizabeth Bott.
"I made them let me come," she explained. "I wanted to find you all and play with you, so I screamed and screamed and screamed till they let me."
She beamed around triumphantly.
"What you doing?"
"We're writing a newspaper and we don't want girls," said William firmly.
"But I want to write a newspaper too."
William scowled.
"Well, you're not going to," he said.
Violet Elizabeth's blue eyes filled with tears. That was her first weapon.
"I can write too, I can," she said plaintively. "I can write newspapers too, I can. I'm a good writer, I am. I can spell too, I can."
"Well, you're not going to spell here," mimicked William heartlessly.
Violet Elizabeth dried her tears. She saw that they were useless, and she did not believe in wasting her effects.
"All right," she said calmly. "I'll squeam then. I'll squeam and squeam and squeam till I'm thick."
More than once William had seen the small but redoubtable lady fulfil this threat quite literally. He watched her with fearsome awe. Violet Elizabeth opened her small mouth.
"It's all right, it's all right," said William brokenly. "Come on, write if you want to."
Violet Elizabeth came on. She wanted to. She found a piece of grimy paper and a pencil with a broken point and sat down, beaming ecstatically, on the ground by William. Violet Elizabeth adored William. She smiled around on them all.
"What shall I write?"
she demanded happily.
"Write anything," snapped William.
"I'll make up a crossword puzzle," she said.
William threw her a glance. In spite of her general objectionableness, she certainly had ideas.
"What you doing, William?"
she said sweetly.
"I'm writing a serial," said William with a superior air.
"You're writing a serial, William," she said. "How nice."
"People," said William ferociously, "people what write newspapers aren't allowed to talk."
"All right, I don't mind."
Again there was silence. All the outlaws were working hard with frowning brows, bitten pencils, dishevelled hair, and agonised, grimy countenances.
I've finished my crossword puzzle,
piped Violet Elizabeth.
You can't have, said William.
Well, I have. They're there.
She passed it to him. One down, what you have drops of, one across, opposite of cat. William looked at this for a long time. Well, what is it? He said at last.
Can't you guess it, William? It's cough and dog. C-O-F, cough.
You don't have drops of cough.
Yes, you do, William. You have cough drops. I've had them. I've had cough drops. I have.
You don't spell them like that anyway, said William.
Well, how do you spell them?
William, who was rather hazy on the point, quickly changed the subject. Well, what's the opposite of a cat?
Dog, William.
Dog isn't the opposite of a cat.
Yes, it is, William, because I know it is.
Well, it's a rotten puzzle, said William with contempt.
It's not, William. It's a nice one. You ought to give a prize of £100 for getting it, like they do in newspapers.
Well, I'm not going to, so shut up.
All right, William, said Violet Elizabeth. I don't mind.
Violet Elizabeth, having gained her main object, could be disarmingly meek. For some minutes there was silence, broken only by the sighs and groans of the editorial staff. Then Violet Elizabeth raised her voice again, shrill and unabashed.
I don't see what good a newspaper is without any crimes.
They looked at her. She met their gaze unflinchingly.
I wish you'd stop interrupting, said William.
But he added, because her words had secretly intrigued him,
What do you mean, saying that a newspaper isn't any good without crimes?
There's always crimes in newspapers. There's crimes and police and people going to prison. If you're going to have a real newspaper, somebody ought to do a crime.
All right, said William, nettled by this invasion of his editorial province. All right, go and do one then.
Violet Elizabeth leapt to her feet.
Yes, I will, William, she said sweetly. I don't mind.
A sigh of relief went up as the small form disappeared into the rain. And again there was silence in the barn.
Violet Elizabeth trotted happily across the field, over the stile, and into the main road, intent upon a career of crime. In the road she saw a young man with curly hair. The young man was an undergraduate of Cambridge who was staying at the village inn for a week's fishing. For the first 2 days the fishing had given him complete satisfaction. On the third day he had seen William's pretty 19-year-old sister Ethel, and after that he had spent most of his time hanging about the road that led past the Browns' house, taking unauthorized snapshots of Ethel whenever she passed him on the road. Today the young man looked excited despite the rain. He had heard that Ethel might be attending the vicar's tea party this afternoon, so he had made friends with the vicar and been invited to the party. He was on his way to the vicarage now. In his pocketbook reposed those snapshots of Ethel which he had managed to take without her knowledge. A small child in gumboots, mackintosh and sou'wester was coming down the road. She seemed to be looking about her expectantly. He smiled at her. The young man liked children, chiefly because he had not met many. The little girl looked up at him with a confiding smile. He slowed down.
Hello,
said the little girl with a bright smile.
Hello,
he replied. He was early. He'd while away a few minutes with this friendly child.
Please sit on this stile with me,
said the little girl. He was rather flattered. There must be something about him that appealed to children. He wished that Ethel could see this little child turning to him with such flattering friendliness and confidence.
All right, he said. Let's.
The stile was very wet, but they both wore mackintoshes. They perched there, side by side, in the rain. The child did not speak. The young man felt that he ought to say something.
It's very wet today, isn't it?
He said brightly.
Yes,
said the child simply. It had not been, he felt, a happy remark. It was not a remark that, if Ethel had overheard it, would have remained for ever in her heart a precious memory.
"Throw me your money,"
said the child imperiously. The young man obligingly took out his pocketbook. He was rather glad of the excuse. It was quite 5 minutes since he had looked at that most engaging snapshot of her three-quarter back view, just as she was turning out of her garden gate into the road. He looked at it now.
"There's my money," he said kindly. "These are £1 notes, these are 10-shilling notes, and this is a £5 note, and these are... are photographs of a most beautiful...
He grabbed at the stile, nearly overbalancing. The small child had seized his pocketbook and was already disappearing round the bend of the road. Hastily reconstructing his ideas of innocent childhood, the young man followed in swift pursuit. He caught her up at the end of the road and held her arm. "Give me that back," he said sternly. She uttered a scream that turned the young man's blood cold. Then she stopped screaming and said, quite composedly,
"I'll scream again if you don't let go of my arm."
Broken in spirit by that terrible scream, the young man let go her arm. He knew that another scream like that would have shattered his nerve completely. Then he saw that the child, still firmly clasping his precious pocketbook, was wriggling through a gap in the hedge and was now in the field beyond, running towards an old tumble-down barn at the further end. The young man followed, keeping his pocketbook anxiously in view.
"Come and see what I've done," shrilled the young person.
He followed her into the old barn. Four boys, in various stages of dishevelment, were engaged in a rough-and-tumble fight on the muddy floor. The young man recognised one of them with a leap of his heart as Ethel's brother. Pieces of paper, evidently laboriously written upon, were trodden into the mud. The four boys sat up and gaped at the two intruders. The small child waved aloft the pocketbook triumphantly.
"I've stolen it," she said. "I'm a criminal."
The young man rubbed his eyes.
Am I mad? Or am I dreaming?
The small child had taken affairs into her own hands.
"You've got to be the judge," she said to William. "And you," to the young man, "you tell him how I stole your purse and put me in prison and put all about it in the newspaper and my photograph. You must have my photograph in the newspaper, because they always do with criminals."
She then laid down the pocketbook on the largest packing case and opened it. The photograph of Ethel fell out. Suddenly, someone appeared in the doorway. The young man went purple to the roots of his ears. William groaned.
"Oh, William, you are an awful boy," said Ethel. "I've been looking for you everywhere. Mother says, have you been out in all this rain? And if you have, go straight in and change."
"Well, I haven't," said William. "I've been sheltering here."
"Oh, you do look awful," said Ethel, gazing at him despairingly.
Then her glance fell upon the open pocketbook and upon her photographs.
Who took these?"
she said, in quite a different tone.
I did,"
stammered the young man, who was now a dull petunia shade.
"But why?"
said Ethel in a very sweet voice.
"I say, it's stopped raining," said Ginger joyously from the doorway. "Let's go out."
"Why?"
said Ethel demurely, with curling lashes lowered over peach-like cheeks.
"Why did you only take me side and back view? I look nicer from the front."
The young man gulped.
May I take you from the front?" he said.
Ethel took up the snapshots.
"I think you'd better," she said, "to make a complete set. We'd have to find a suitable background, of course."
The young man took a bold plunge.
The background I'd like is Fairy Glen. We'd pass the inn on the way, and I'd call for my camera. It stopped raining, and the sun's coming out. Will you?"
Fairy Glen was at least 2 miles away. Ethel's blue eyes danced, and her pretty lips quivered.
"Why not?" she said.
The Outlaws and District Times lay trampled in the mud on the floor of the empty barn. The Outlaws were being Red Indians in the neighbouring wood. They had completely forgotten the Outlaws and District Times. It had whiled away a wet afternoon, and for the Outlaws it had served its purpose. Ethel and the young man were on the road which led to the Fairy Glen. They were getting on very well indeed. The Outlaws and District Times had served its purpose for them too.